which is like love, which is like everything. A Dragara fan work, written by Resistate and read by Frecklebomb Fic, with an archive warning for major character death. Rating general audiences. Relationships Sethra Lavode, Teldra, and Corti, Kira the Thief. With additional character tags for Noishpa, Loyosh, Vlad Norathar, Vlad Taltosh, Norathar Elanya, Alira Ikiron, Marolan Adrienne, and Devera. With additional tags for romance, softness, weddings, humour, and light angst. Summary. Sethra Lavode cordially invites you to Kira and Corti's gay Dureg wedding. Sethra Lavode was no stranger to the Surkhe region. It was located in the northeast, west of both the Pepperfields and the Eastern Mountains, and its proximity to long-standing enemies of the Empire was, of course, invaluable. Sethra had based herself here during several wars with the Eastern Kingdoms. Surkhe was far enough away from where the battle was directed that those in command were usually able to implement strategy without fear of death. Sethra feared death less than most generals, of course, being already dead. On this occasion, she occupied a manor house some distance outside of Miska, the main settlement in the region, and had raised preparations for a wedding rather than a battle. As a concession to the day's events, she had supplemented her usual black wardrobe with a mauve collar and cuffs, barely distinguishable against her pale skin. She had chosen black and silver as the main wedding colours, and had, at Vlad's grandfather's urging, allowed Corti and Kira to pick an additional accent colour from a small selection. Corti had tried to catch Sethra's eye while Kira was bent over the sample book, but Sethra had ignored Corti. If Sethra stopped to indulge the interest of every single person in her actions, she would never get anything done. A little mystery had never hurt anyone, much less Sethra Lavode. Vlad's grandfather came to stand beside her on the stone steps of the manor house, leaning on the stick he used to aid his movement. He was acting Count Surkhe in his grandson's absence, and had been pleased with Sethra's suggestion that the wedding be held at the family estate. She was startled at first by his attire today, until she realized his separate pieces of clothing drew from more than one region of Fenario. His shirt appeared to be in the style of the northern region of that kingdom, while his breeches and sash were in the style favoured by the southeast. His boots were in the style of another kingdom altogether, and his hat appeared to Sethra to be of his own creation. Perhaps it had something to do with witchcraft he practiced. The overall impression was one of an Eastern man of significant social status in attendance at an event of some importance, such as a coronation or wedding. Sethra was aware that this was a generous interpretation of the mix of traditional clothing with which she was confronted. But she was prepared, today, to be generous. Sethra allowed Vlad's grandfather to speak first, as was his due. "My lady," he said. "Noishpa," she said. Corti and Kira had discussed a number of things before this day, things that had not necessarily been made clear by one to the other from the beginning of their acquaintance, or even the beginning of their romance. As a result, a number of familial relationships had been discovered and strengthened, and Sethra Lavode now called Vlad's grandfather by the same name as Vlad and Corti, and indeed Kira. "The supplementary defences we discussed are in place," said Noishpa, "as is the food." Sethra nodded and placed a hand on her great weapon, Ice Flame, who gave corroboration. "The brides are happy, which is to be expected, but they're also, I think, nervous." Sethra blinked at Noishpa's concern regarding Corti and Kira. There were a number of important guests expected today, including the sometime captain of the Phoenix Guard, and, naturally, her focus had been on security. Sethra took her responsibility to the Empire seriously. To all intents and purposes, Sethra was the Empire. She and Noishpa stood for a time in silence. It was a pleasant enough day. The enclouding was very high. They weren't very far east, but still, Sethra fancied she could see almost past the enclouding to the sky beyond. She didn't know why she was nervous. She worried the hilt of Iceflame. This was Corti and Kira's day, not her own. "I will check again on the seating plan in the dining hall," said Noishpa finally. "It is, you know, a very delicate balance." Sethra nodded and remained at the door, awaiting the arrival of Corti and Kira's guests. Presently, she noticed a figure making its way down the long road toward the manor house. The road had been established to ensure anyone approaching could be seen from a great distance off. She peered at the figure. It couldn't be. The figure came closer. Sethra consulted with Iceflame. Iceflame stuttered, as if they were not processing information quickly, or at all. Iceflame didn't give her a definitive yes or no, because they could not. Iceflame never stuttered. The figure was wearing the green and white of the House of Isola. The figure made movements meant to demonstrate they posed no threat, just as the person whom it could not possibly be would have done. Everything Sethra had yet to accomplish skittered across her consciousness in that moment. Still, it did not feel as if it were the end. She drew Iceflame just as the figure stopped in front of her and performed a low courtesy. "I assure you, it is indeed I, my lady," said the figure. Sethra was loath to believe it. However, as the figure was not causing any harm that Sethra could detect, and indeed could not cause any harm, not while Sethra was on the world and in possession of her great weapon, Sethra supposed she could chance an explanation. "May I?" said the figure, gesturing to a valise by its feet. Sethra nodded, not relinquishing her grip on Iceflame. The figure withdrew a familiar black object from the valise, then stepped forward and offered the object to Sethra. Sethra could see that it was an invitation, edged in silver and made out in Sethra's own hand. Sethra had certainly written the invitation. Certainly, she had even issued the invitation. However, "I did not expect you to attend," said Sethra. "I would never be so discourteous as to turn down an invitation issued by yourself, my lady, to an event such as this. Not without good reason."
"You did have good reason," said Sethra.
She kept her voice steady. It was possible she managed this only because she was Sethra Lavode. "I don't understand, my lady," said Teldra. If she didn't understand, Sethra was not going to be the one to tell her. Sethra paused to consult with various of her sources, including the orb and several gods. She did not see how it was possible, but finally she was satisfied that the woman standing in front of her was indeed Lord Marolan's seneschal, Lady Teldra. She made a mental note to speak with the necromancer at the earliest opportunity. "Shall I greet your guests in your stead, my lady?" asked Teldra. It was an abrupt question, but one perfectly appropriate for the situation. It convinced Teldra more than her inquiries that the Isola standing before her was indeed who she appeared to be. Teldra, naturally, had deduced that Sethra was keen to be doing other things, and in rather a hurry at that.
"I gratefully accept your kind offer, Lady Teldra," said Sethra.
"I will freshen up from my long journey," Teldra said, "and return shortly." Sethra merely nodded.
She continued to linger on the steps of the manor house, awaiting Teldra's return, and engaging in occasional psionic communication with Marolan regarding defences. Nothing was amiss. Except, possibly, the single dreg she now spotted flying with speed and purpose, directly towards her position. Sethra frowned. It could be said that she was hosting a dreg ceremony, as each bride had, in her own manner, gained notoriety within the criminal organisation known as the dreg. It could not, however, be said that she had expected today to see any of the cold-blooded creatures residing in the jungles outside Adrulanka, known as the dreg. She knew little of the wedding ceremony of Easterners, and had forgotten even littler, but she did not recall that they involved dreg. She had not been present at the Eastern wedding of Corti and Vlad, as Vlad had not thought to invite her. But though she assumed that Vlad's dreg familiar, Loyosh, had been present, she did not think... Ah, of course. Loyosh. Sethra extended one arm, and presently Loyosh alighted. He bent his head, and Sethra scratched behind his ear. After a minute, Tuko shuffled out, carrying a tray of dead Tekla, which he placed on the top step before shuffling back inside. Alira and Noishpar's cats appeared, each ignoring the existence of the other, and sauntered toward the tray. Loyosh hissed at them, and they slunk away in separate directions, each pretending they had never had any interest in the Tekla. A larger dreg, this one light brown in colouring, joined Loyosh at the tray. Sethra recognised the second dreg as Loyosh's mate, Rosha. She assumed Vlad was nearby, but there was no sign of the Easterner. It wasn't until Loyosh had finished eating that he spoke. His mind to Sethra's mind.
"So, Vlad is dressed up. I mean, I think he's dressed up. His shirt has flowers on it that he made himself with a needle and thread. He says they're flowers, but they don't look like flowers to me, goddess. I mean, enchantress. What do I know, though? I'm just a carnivore."
Loyosh stopped, rather as if he thought what he'd communicated was sufficient. It was not, and Sethra made what she hoped was a noise of encouragement.
"And he cleaned his boots yesterday. And there's something going on with his great weapon. Me, I wouldn't call it a great weapon. I mean, what's so great about it? I don't think Vlad noticed yet, but there's definitely something going on with that thing."
"Oh, you needn't worry about Godslayer," said Sethra. "Tell me more of Vlad." No doubt Sethra had seen a dreg pace before, and had forgotten. Loyosh was definitely pacing now, claws scraping against stone as he dragged himself back and forth across the steps of the manor house. The cats returned, and began licking the empty tray, still ignoring each other. Rosha had flown away some time earlier. Loyosh appeared lost in his own thoughts, such as they were. "What news of Vlad?" pressed Sethra. She thought she would know if he were under external attack, but threats from within were an entirely different matter. She did not know the current state of Vlad's mind, but surely, living as he had for the past several years, removed from all society apart from that of his familiar, had affected him. Several years was a very long time for his species, she remembered. Loyosh flung his wings into the air.
"I don't know, Enchantress. He wants to know if you really want him here. He says he has it in writing, but..."
Loyosh made a frustrated noise and took sudden flight. He made his way to a nearby tree, collected an object using his mouth, and deposited it, unceremoniously, at Sethra's feet. It was Vlad's invitation to Corti's marriage to Kira, covered in teeth marks and venom, but still legible. "I must admit I did not expect Vlad to attend, as I am aware he feels the need to live apart from his friends at this time," said Sethra. "But certainly, had I not wanted Vlad here, I would not have invited him." She expected this to resolve the matter. Loyosh, however, remained in her presence.
"Well,
asked Sethra, allowing the impatience she felt to find expression in her voice.
Well, but, with all due respect, Enchantress, Vlad was wondering if it was Kauti and Kier who wanted him here.
Ah, well, said Sethra. As to that... She waited, but Loyash did not know his line. Clearly, neither Vlad nor Kauti had exposed the dreg to Parfi. While Sethra felt this was a decision with some merit, it made the exchange in which she was engaged less entertaining than it otherwise could have been. Sethra withdrew a letter from the inside breast pocket of her jacket. Kauti had asked her to produce it for Vlad's perusal, should he require it. Now that she thought about it, both Kauti and Kira had expressed doubt that Vlad would feel welcome at their wedding. Sethra had dismissed their concerns, as Vlad was certainly welcome. I believe this will address Vlad's reluctance on the matter, she said, handing Loyash the letter. He took flight, Rosha emerging from a nearby tree to join him. It occurred to Sethra that Kauti had also written some detailed instructions on the care and feeding of Vlad Norothar, and that she, Sethra, had not checked to see exactly what she was handing Loyash. Well, it was little matter. She turned her mind instead to the greater matter of the sorcerous and mundane defences surrounding both the manor house and the Empire. Teldra emerged looking just as fresh and composed as she had when she had first arrived, which was to say, very. There was a troubled look on her lovely face. "My lady," she said. Sethra waited, but Teldra did not say anything further. Sethra supposed she must tell Teldra something. "Should anyone ask, Teldra, tell them you have very recently returned from a long journey, the details of which you cannot discuss, as they concern matters of the Empire at the highest level." Teldra nodded. "And if anyone asks how long I shall remain, my lady?" This gave Sethra pause. She did not know why Teldra was here, but she was not fool enough to believe that she would remain long. Sethra could stay silent, but she found, rather, that she wished to do what she could to make Teldra's stay a tolerable one. "Tell them that you are here to partake in the festivities, but that you do not expect the duration of your visit to be of any significant length." There was a long pause. "Thank you, my lady," said Teldra, finally. "You were used to call me Sethra." Another pause. "I remember, my lady." Sethra wished she could be sure that Teldra was not merely being polite. "Sethra," she said again. She didn't like to insist, but she liked it more than she did speaking to a stranger wearing Teldra's face. And who was Teldra? Teldra inclined her head. "Sethra, what is the last thing that you remember?" Teldra was silent for so long that Sethra almost thought she would not answer. "There was a battle," Teldra ventured at last. "Morolan was lost. Did Vlad survive?" There were many things Sethra could say regarding Vlad, but what she settled on was, "Yes." "Did I survive?" "We saved Morolan," said Sethra, as gently as she knew how. Sethra's voice, when she next spoke, was as flat as the ground at the base of Barret's tomb. "I see, my Sethra." "I had thought to never see you again," said Sethra. "I see," Teldra said again. "There are responsibilities you must wish to be about," Do you wish to leave me here to greet your guests? Sethra did. Sethra sat later with Corti and Vlad's child on her lap. Corti and Kira had very recently exchanged vows in front of guests, who had, on the whole, caused very little concern for Sethra. Neuschpa had had to intervene when an elderly Tekla woman, a guest, had arrived carrying 6 live Norska, not guests, in a basket. It was Sethra's understanding that the matter had been resolved to the satisfaction of all involved, including, presumably, the Norska. Corti and Kira disappeared to put their signatures to some papers related to their marriage, and Sethra continued to sit with Vlad Norathar. He was fascinated by her epaulettes. Perhaps he had a military future ahead of him. Sethra rather hoped not. Perhaps she was more fond of Vlad Norathar than she had supposed. Corti had deposited the small child on Sethra's lap prior to the ceremony, with evident glee, causing Sethra to wonder, as she occasionally did, if Corti was taking the particular things Kira felt it necessary to share quite as well as she could be. Corti and Kira continued to be occupied elsewhere, and so Sethra was left with no choice but to eavesdrop on conversation between Illyria and Norathar. Norathar was sitting decorously to Sethra's left, as befitted not only the dragon heir to the throne, but also anyone over the age of 300, and causing Sethra to wish Vlad Norathar behaved rather more like his namesake. Norathar, that is, not Vlad. Sethra decided this was no time to dwell on the fact that Norathar had once shared the same occupation as Corti, and, indeed, Vlad. Beside Sethra, Illyria and Norathar were discussing the attire of the other guests. Atop Sethra, Vlad Norathar attempted to contribute to the discussion by sucking on one of Sethra's epaulettes. She had never regretted more on her promise to never ensorcel Vlad Norathar unnecessarily. Sethra was considering both matters of necessity and the consolation that black fabric was at least forgiving of drool, when conversation between Illyria and Norathar moved from Corti's crimson floor-length gown to something far less innocuous. Sethra knew, of course, that the Empire had commissioned artists, as well as those aspiring to the trade, to produce paintings of the Empire's fruit, and she knew also that the Empire had further commissioned paintings of all of the Empire's potential fruit. What she had not known until recently, however, was the extent to which the proposed new fruits were complicit in the constant seditious activity underlying the Empire. "But Ascension Potalangs do work well in pies," Illyria was saying to Norathar, completely confident in her assertion. Sethra flew through her mental catalogue until she alighted on the fruit in question. Ascension Potalangs were proposed to be rather the size and shape of a small rotund pepper, but tart rather than fiery. The most common variety had a green exterior, likely for camouflage in nature. Sethra shuddered at the thought of spending any more time outdoors than was necessary, and a pink and white interior, likely for camouflage within salads. There was also a proposed less common variety, with an interior as black as the skies over the east at night. "I engineered potalangs in my genetics laboratory and baked them into a pie. I assure you it was delicious," insisted Illyria. There was a long pause in which Sethra and Norathar likely had similar thoughts regarding the extent of Illyria's political naivety. "They may work well in pies," Norathar said finally. "But consider, Illyria, the reason that this and other of your fruits are to be found in the pages of imperial publications, rather than the more respected independent publications." Norathar glanced sideways at Sethra Lavode, as if to ensure that Sethra's attention was caught. But Sethra didn't need to witness this to know that she was meant to have heard every word. Illyria, unsurprisingly, was rubbish at sedition, preferring grander and more obviously illegal gestures. Norathar, unsurprisingly, was far too good at it, considering she was a dragon heir. Sethra suppressed a sigh. Naturally, She had deduced that the independently proposed fruits were coded, but she had rather hoped that this was one item that could remain at the bottom of her list of things to do, while she considered more pressing matters. She doubted that, now she was supposed to be aware, she could foil everyone's plans by simply ignoring the matter. In mild retaliation for the addition to her work, she detached Vlad Norothar from her person and handed him to Norothar. "Please watch your godson," she said. "I see Lord Carverin, and I have been meaning to ask him if he is really taking the season off from competing, or rather, doing the job for which he was commissioned and receives, as a result, payment from the Empress, or if he is in fact retired." Sethra did not, in the end, ask Carverin anything, as by the time she was halfway across the room, he had become engaged in debate with an elderly Tekla woman. Sethra deduced that she was the same Tekla who earlier had been in possession of Norska. The Tekla retained both her basket and, it seemed, a strong desire to pin Carverin down regarding several of his late, vague statements. Sethra found she had little inclination to relieve Carverin of his burden. It would do him some good to be exposed to the views of those outside his inner circle. She undertook a routine check of the sorceress and mundane defences for which she was responsible, and was pleased they continued to hold. Sethra then looked around for some convivial company. Teldra was sitting at the bar with Marolan. Corti and Kira were dancing. Rather, Corti was dancing. Kira should have undertaken more instruction. Still, they looked happy enough. Kira, Sethra was pleased to note, looked quite lovely even in grey. Sethra supposed she should give Teldra and Marolan the opportunity to become reacquainted. She glanced around for anyone else with whom she was tolerably familiar. Vlad was speaking with an Eastern man and woman she recognised only because she had caused inquiries to be made into the lives of all Corti and Kira's guests. Marie-France Dubray and Patrice Lazon had travelled to attend the wedding, most recently from the East, and were accompanied by their daughter, Billy Rose. Corti had put forth that Marie-France and Patrice were as good as her parents, and while a number of facts Sethra could hardly call interesting had been uncovered regarding the pair, nothing alarming had presented itself. Certainly, Marie-France and Patrice were undertaking every action Sethra had heard told of parents. They had stopped fussing over Corti and Kira only long enough to allow them to actually marry, and it seemed likely they were allowing the brides to dance only so Marie-France and Patrice could look after their other daughter. Billy Rose was circling the table at which her parents sat, carrying Vlad Norothar inexpertly but adequately. Occasionally, Patrice would correct his daughter's form. Sethra approved. Then Alira's daughter, clearly known already to Billy Rose, made herself known, and the child unceremoniously left Vlad Norothar with her father and ran off to play. Sethra supposed that, on the left, she should offer Marie-France and Patrice the use of the ice located deep in the heart of Desert Mountain. On the right, she didn't particularly care to entertain visitors at her home at this time. When Sethra glanced again at the bar, Teldra was alone. Sethra couldn't see Marolan anywhere. More guests were now dancing, and Sethra supposed she could, without appearing forward, ask Teldra to dance. She did, and Teldra accepted. Sethra spoke briefly with the orchestra, who presently started to play a light-hearted tune that had been popular in Teldra's youth. Teldra professed to have no preference when it came to music, but this was patently ridiculous, and Sethra refused to indulge her, especially as she suspected Teldra would remain with them for no great time. Teldra's smile, as they danced, was brilliant. Sethra was glad of it. She was glad to move in time with Teldra. She was glad of the cool press of Teldra's hand against her own, and the less cool press, as called for by the music and subsequently the dance, of her chest and hips against Teldra's chest and hips. Teldra's hand was in Sethra's hand, and Sethra spun her away and back again. Was I dead? Teldra asked. Her voice was like the surface of a lake, or a sea. Sethra considered her response. Very like, my dear, she said finally. She released Teldra when the song ended. Teldra bowed and thanked Sethra for the dance, politely, but with what Sethra suspected was genuine warmth. Sethra, feeling expansive, made conversation with Carverin for exactly the length of time required to be courteous, before excusing herself and settling herself next to Marolan at the bar. Corti, sensing an opportunity, appeared and deposited Vlad Norathar on Sethra's lap. Sethra supposed it was, after all, Corti's day to dedicate her time and attention, in great part, to her wife. Teldra was dancing now with a lanky Easterner, whom Sethra knew to be a player of a sport not popular in the Empire, named Hockey. Light-coloured hair grew on the lower part of his face, and he had constantly to push back the hair atop his head, else it too wound up on his face. Teldra dimpled at something he said, and Sethra resolved thereafter to ensure the young man's stay in the Empire was a pleasant one. Marolan watched his dear friend dance, a terrible expression on his face. Sethra touched his arm. Marolan, she said quietly. He nodded, and she handed him Vlad Norathar. The small child burbled happily on achieving his uncle Marolan's lap. Sethra determined not to take it personally. Marolan's expression softened, and Sethra was glad of it. Presently, Noishpar and Vlad came over. Vlad? Sethra said. Sethra, Vlad said. Vlad, Marolan said. Marolan, Vlad said. There was a stretch of time where no one said anything. Vlad, usually the first to attempt conversation, was staring at his son as if he had not seen him before. Sethra didn't see any need to make the silence that had settled less awkward. She supposed she was still annoyed with Vlad for making her plans to save the Empire and the world more difficult by his having fled Adrilanka and civilization. "Can I have my son, Marolan?" Vlad said stiffly. Marolan and Vlad Norathar gave Vlad identical suspicious looks. Marolan handed Vlad Norathar to Noishpar, and Noishpar and Vlad Norathar left the bar. The terrible expression Marolan had been wearing earlier crept back onto his face. "Were you not saying last time we spoke that you wished to garner opinion on a new concoction?" Sethra asked. Marolan brightened a fraction. He spoke to the bartender, one of Carverin's guards who had been raised in a freehouse and was a tolerable hand at serving, as well as upbraiding customers, and she disappeared into a back room. She returned bearing two dark brown bottles, both sweating profusely. Sethra gathered that the young woman had just now removed the bottles from an icebox, in which Marolan insisted they be placed. She watched as Marolan withdrew from his cloak what she recognised immediately as a carbonated beverage. The bartender stared in fascination as Marolan released a catch on the top of the container and combined the fizzy clear liquid within, tonic water, Sethra gathered, with the contents of one of the bottles. "Clava," Marolan explained. "Ah," said Sethra, politely. Corti and Kira arrived then, in fits of laughter at some joke to which the rest of the party were not privy. Their good mood helped to clear away much of the gloom that had settled over the bar, as did the crimson of Corti's dress, and the flush high on Kira's cheeks. The two women settled on stools next to Sethra and Marolan. "Excellent timing," Marolan said. He sounded almost cheerful. "Barkeep, we require 4 high glasses and 4 low glasses." The guard placed 8 high glasses on the table and left, reluctantly, it seemed to Sethra, to serve other guests who had descended upon the bar in the break between dancing and dinner. Marolan turned to Corti and Kira. I assume you will both join me in drinking to your happiness?
Certainly, Kira said immediately.
Sethra was mildly surprised when Corti, after a short pause, agreed. Granted, her acquaintance with Corti was by no means extensive, but she had not, before now, seen her react without suspicion to any manner of food or drink. Perhaps her inhibition was due to the occasion. Sethra had little idea what Corti did these days, but she did not doubt that whatever it was continued to involve periodic threats to her person. One did not operate as one of Adrulanka's most reputable assassins for any length of time, and ceased to be a threat simply because one now refrained from killing people for a living. And Sethra, I know you are up for any challenge, Marolan continued. Sethra bowed in agreement. Marolan poured portions of the mixture of cold clava and tonic water into the four tall glasses. This, he announced, holding up the remaining bottle, is an herbal liqueur of my own making.
How clever of you, said Corti politely.
Marolan nodded as if in agreement. Or, perhaps, if Sethra was feeling charitable, in excitement. She wasn't feeling particularly charitable, however. She was feeling on edge. She checked again on the sorcerous and mundane defences for which she was responsible, then glanced about the room. She neither sensed nor saw anything unusual. Still, her unease remained. "The liqueur contains a mixture of 56 spices, fruits, roots, and herbs," said Marolan. "I've been working on it for a considerable amount of time, perhaps 200 years. The recipe is a secret, of course."
"Of course," said Corti solemnly.
Marolan poured the concoction of his own making into the four small glasses. "What does it taste like?" asked Kira, picking up one of the small glasses and holding it up to the light. Sethra had been wondering the same. She couldn't see any sediment within the dark amber liquid, despite the 56 items it was said to contain. She supposed Marolan achieved this by means of sorcery, or perhaps witchcraft. "It tastes like the gateway to another world," Marolan informed them. Sethra craned her head, looking for Taldra as well as the necromancer. Surely this would be of interest to them. She found herself wondering where Vlad Norothar was. Her feeling something was not quite right could not be shaken. She contacted Noishpah. Vlad Norothar was fine. Noishpah, too, could feel that something was not quite as it should be. Sethra contemplated her next steps, as Marolan explained how they were to go about imbibing for maximum enjoyment. "We must all drink at the same time," Marolan said. On the left, it was good at this stage in Sethra's plans to continue to avoid contact with their enemy. "On my signal," Marolan said, "add the contents of the smaller glass to the contents of the larger and drink in one fluid movement as the liquids combine." He raised his small glass.
"To the brides! To the brides!"
they chorused. On the right, each additional encounter with the enemy afforded her the opportunity to study their ways. Sethra, Corti, Marolan, and Kira poured their drinks as one and raised them to their lips as one. Sethra closed her eyes as the potency of the concoction made itself known to her internal organs. When she opened her eyes, the genuine were there. It was advantageous that alcohol always heightened Sethra's ability to react quickly. She now contemplated her next steps with greater urgency. The genuine were not visible to everyone present, of course, and that was a boon. The children could clearly see them, but had the sense, Sethra noted grimly, to hang back instead of rushing toward the enormous white creatures. She considered her resources. Alira and Marolan could see the enemy, as could Vlad and Taldra. Taldra. She felt the flutter of Taldra's dress as she arrived at Sethra's side. "My lady," said Taldra. "Shall I speak to the genuine to ascertain their purpose here?"
"Please," said Taldra.
She reached out her hands and caught at the collars of two figures attempting to run past her, toward the genuine. Billy Rose and Devera, she said, in her most terrible Enchantress of Dzur Mountain voice. They immediately ceased trying to free themselves from her grasp. Gather the children and take them to the table by the window, the one with the rose centerpiece. Do you know what roses look like? She asked, so that there could be no mistake regarding where they were to take shelter.
I do, said Billy Rose. My mother...
Good, said Sethra, cutting her off. Your mother and father should accompany you. Walk along the wall, not through the middle of the room. Devera?
Yes, Enchantress?
Do not, on any account, approach the Genuine. Not even should they appear to transform into structures such as resemble a child's playground. Keep the children away as well. Do you understand?
Yes, Auntie.
And don't let your mother see you.
Yes, Auntie, Devera said impatiently.
Sethra chose not to take issue with her tone at this time. She released Devera and Billy Rose, and presently Illyria came to join them, lipstick smeared. Mario had been invited to the wedding, though Sethra had not yet seen him. Marolan glared at Illyria while she cleaned her face daintily, as a cat would, should it clean its face with a serviette rather than its paw. Illyria ignored Marolan, for which Sethra spared a moment to be grateful. Teldra continued to make high-pitched noises in the direction of the Genuine, and Sethra waited until she had ceased this activity, before asking for a pressie of negotiations.
It was more of a conversation, my lady, said Teldra.
Sethra waved her hands impatiently. Sethra, conceded Teldra, switching to one of the eastern languages with which she and Teldra were familiar, and it was, to be hoped, the Genuine were not. The Genuine claim to have been summoned here by us, against their will. They claim, furthermore, that they have tried to leave, but are being prevented from doing so by the defences surrounding the estate.
Why, then? Asked Marolan, joining the conversation. Have they taken up silverware from the tables, and brandishing knives and forks as if they are weapons?
I am inclined, in this particular instance, to believe the Genuine regarding the bulk of their claims, said Teldra. There clearly is more to this situation we find ourselves in than meets the eye. Here she looked at Sethra. Sethra met her gaze steadily. However, continued Teldra, as to their claim that they are not prepared to take advantage of the situation in which they find themselves, this claim I am inclined to disbelieve. Illyria made a noise of disgust. As if the Genoese need weapons, she said. Marolan too made a noise of disgust. This one aimed at Illyria rather than the enemy. That is exactly the lack of foresight that will cause us to become outmatched, cousin.
Silence. Both of you, said Sethra. Teldra, I too am inclined to disbelieve the Genuine will not take every opportunity presented to cause us harm. Marolan, we are not outmatched. We are on our world, not theirs. What is more, we have our wits about us. We have Lady Teldra.
Here, Lady Teldra bowed.
And, most importantly, we have furniture.
Furniture? Asked Illyria.
Bide, said Sethra.
Noishpa approached, and informed Sethra he was holding dinner. Sethra noticed that he kept the Genuine always in sight as he provided the further information that Vlad Norothar was sequestered with the other children. When Sethra glanced toward the far wall, she saw that the child was on Vlad's lap, sound asleep. Billy Rose, though tall for an eastern child, was on Marie-France's lap. Marie-France held her daughter close, while at the same time examining the tailor's label in Vlad's cloak. Three children Sethra refused to recognize on sight were on Patrice's lap, and Rosha was at home on his shoulder. The rose centerpiece was in pieces, the victim of some manner of art project. Sethra could see Corti give occasional direction to the children seated around the table, heads bent studiously over their creations.
"'Do you require any assistance, my lady?' asked Neuschpah, leaning almost casually against his stick. "'You may, should the opportunity arise. Inform those concerned with the food that I am expecting a delay of no longer than 30 minutes.' "'30 minutes, my lady,' Neuschpah murmured. He didn't sound convinced, but Sethra was inclined to overlook his lack of confidence in her abilities, particularly as it would be 30 minutes only should her gambit be successful. Should it not be successful, no one on the world would survive. 30 minutes, she said decisively. Neuschpah turned and wandered back toward the kitchen. Sethra took a moment to appreciate the extent to which he was able to hide, in his movement, the terror that had been evident in his eyes. "Furniture?" Marolan asked, as soon as Neuschpah had disappeared. The Genoine were unable to move beyond the additional barrier Sethra had put in place when they'd arrived, but they had started moving about within the small space allocated to them. One of them appeared to be trying to read the name cards set atop one of the tables. The seating plan would be in disarray once Sethra had finished dealing with the Genoine, but it couldn't be helped. "'Why are the Genoine here?' demanded Alira. "'Simply put, the Genoine are here for the same reason they are always here. To try to take over our world,' said Sethra. "'While I did not anticipate their arrival today, I did, of course, plan for it.'
It's obvious that the Genoine have deduced Godslayer is no longer a threat, and have taken advantage of the situation, said Marolan. Sethra, in retrospect, was inclined to agree. Before she could speak, Teldra cleared her throat. I received the impression, speaking with the Genoine, that there is an automatic chain of events that is implemented should an advantageous opportunity arise.
"'Well, that's alarming,' said Alira.
The glint in her eye and hungry expression on her face suggested she thought otherwise.
"'Quite,' said Marolan.
The same glint in his eye and same hungry expression on his face.
"'Would anyone care to hear how we can expect in this instance to defeat the Genoine?' asked Sethra. Raising her voice slightly so as to be heard over Marolan and Alira's contributions, such as they were, to strategy. Everyone ceased talking, and Sethra took this as license to continue.
I have devised a plan with which to neutralize the Genoine, she announced. We must move the furniture until the Genoine change shape and are properly neutralized. We may expect the Genoine to take many shapes in this process until the correct shape is discovered.
There was silence for a long moment. How will we know which is the correct shape? Asked Taldra. In point of fact, Sethra didn't know. Tuco had cleared away the notes she'd made on this matter before she had committed them to memory. Circumstances being what they were, she had not had the opportunity to revisit this particular offensive strategy.
I should think it would be fairly obvious, said Sethra.
No one spoke. Vlad would have challenged her on this, Sethra felt, but Vlad was otherwise occupied at the moment. Marolan and Alira were looking expectantly at Sethra. Teldra, she was pleased to note, had gone back to studying the Genoine. Sethra appreciated initiative, particularly when it did not interfere with her plans. She closed her eyes and concentrated on recalling her notes until she was as certain as she could be regarding the pattern in which the furniture must be arranged. The drama she'd expected to create when she opened her eyes was undercut by the fact that she had to clear her throat to get everyone's attention.
First you can return those to their homes, Sethra said, indicating Marolan and Alira's great weapons.
They glowered as they sheathed Black Wand and Pathfinder, respectively.
Next, you can take 4 chairs and 4 tables from the first edge of the room, and arrange them into a diamond pattern, as so. Sethra plucked several serviettes from the bar and a fountain pen from her pocket. She used Maroland's leftover clava as ink and sketched out the pattern in which the 100 tables and chairs should be arranged. Maroland, Alira, and Teldra bent over the sketch. "Which edge is the first edge?" Sethra looked at Teldra. "I would think this edge," Teldra said thoughtfully. She gestured to the wall to the left of the bar. "If we start here, then the final wall will be the one at which the Genuine have situated themselves. I think it would be advantageous to our plans to involve the Genuine at the end, rather than the beginning." Marolan and Alira looked at Sethra. "For what occasion are you waiting?" asked Sethra. She began pulling chairs away from the nearest table. This was not a situation in which it behoved her to lead from behind. 5 minutes after that, the tables and chairs were arranged as directed, and the Genuine were penned into a corner, manifesting now as a pack of sheep. This was, unfortunately, not the manifestation that would cause them, eventually, to return to their own world. 10 minutes after that, Sethra had run out of serviettes on which to draw. There was no shortage of furniture to be arranged and rearranged, and the Genuine had manifested, in no particular order, as several birds with red feathers and large beaks, several dozen creatures resembling Norska, and one horseless carriage, the like of which Sethra had not seen outside Maroland's windows. Or rather, inside Maroland's windows. She ceased dwelling on impossible things, and concentrated instead on defeating the Genuine. 5 minutes after that, the chairs and tables were arranged a final time, causing the Genuine to manifest as a large, soft structure, such as would not be out of place in a child's playground. Sethra stepped back, satisfied. It would be only a matter of time now before the Genuine were forced to vacate the world. Sethra estimated this would take no longer than 5 minutes more. A minute after that, Devera tugged at Sethra's pant leg. "Are you certain we cannot play on the soft toy?" "Quite certain," she said, not unkindly. She was sure it was perfectly safe, but there was always the infinitesimal chance she was wrong. Sethra hadn't achieved everything she'd achieved by believing herself infallible, and she could be certain that the legend surrounding the Enchantress of Dzur Mountain would expand to include the fact that she lured children to their doom, whether she permitted them to play or not. So truly, there was nothing to be gained by gambling their safety. 4 minutes after that, the Genuine were gone. Vlad wandered over. "When are you going to sort the Genuine out once and for all, Sethra?" he asked. "I'll do it in your lifetime, Easterner," Sethra replied. Vlad had nothing to say to that. Sethra felt the slight psionic echo of Loyosh's laughter. Noishpar appeared at Sethra's elbow. He surveyed the room. "I suppose we don't need to move the tables back." "I suppose we don't," said Sethra. She sat down on the nearest chair. There was something about outmaneuvering the Genuine that always made her want to sit down afterward. Perhaps it was the certainty that no matter how decisive and anticlimactic the victory, the Genuine would never stop trying to destroy all that she was compelled to protect. "Marolan, the table cards," she said. She shuffled through the cards until she found the ones belonging to herself and Teldra. She placed her own card on the table in front of her, and Teldra's beside her own. Teldra sat down next to her. Sethra passed Teldra the cards, and she shuffled through them until she found the cards for Marie-France Dubray, Patrice Lauzon, and their daughter. Sethra nodded her approval. She was looking forward to conversation at dinner on a topic other than the Genuine. She had no idea what a Grand Prix season was,
but she imagined it would be soothing to find out. Sethra took the remaining cards from Teldra and handed them to Marolan. "My lord, you are tolerably acquainted with entertaining. Will you distribute the rest of the place cards as you see fit?" Marolan had an expression on his face that indicated both that he would like to argue and that he had considered this and thought better of it. He and Alira bowed and moved off. Dinner was served presently, and eaten by many, if not most, of the guests. Corti and Kira said mercifully few words to those assembled. Norathar and Alira raised toasts in honour of the brides, before the party moved en masse to the largest of the ballrooms. Teldra and Sethra rose along with the others at their table, to bid farewell to Patrice and Marie-France. Sethra then sat down again, and at a gesture, Teldra did as well. This did not prevent the impossibly young Billy Rose from embracing both Sethra and Teldra. Teldra lifted the child into her arms, so as to return the embrace. Sethra patted Billy Rose's shoulder as Billy Rose flung her arms around Sethra's waist. Marie-France and Patrice looked on with fond expressions on their faces. "Come along, Cabbage," Marie-France said, holding out her hand to her daughter. Marie-France was clearly trying valiantly not to laugh. Sethra appreciated the attempt. "I am sure the Enchantress has much work to do." "Quite," said Sethra.
The dining hall contained now only Sethra and Teldra. It was wonderfully quiet. "As a point of fact, I do not have to do anything that cannot wait until tomorrow," said Sethra. "I imagine you will be with us for not very much longer, and I should like to spend that time with you, if you are amenable." Teldra dipped her head, as graceful in her agreement as any wild Isola. "I trust you have been allocated a chamber?"
"Indeed, I have allocated myself one."
"In that case, I suggest that we retire to a more convivial environment. As I recall, you require very little sleep. And furthermore, I dare say you have many of the answers I seek as to my current predicament."
"I dare say I do," said Sethra. She stood and extended her arm to Teldra.
Teldra rose, and together, arms linked, they ducked under a garland made of rose petals and left the dining hall. They wandered through the ballroom, filled with music and conversation and laughter. They wandered down a hallway containing an alcove, where a tall figure in ashes and a shorter figure in flame were wrapped around each other, each stealing the other's breath. They wound their way up a stair alongside six small creatures with quivering noses, and down a stair alongside a man who wasn't there. They wandered through a kitchen, where a threadbare white Tom and an elegant white Queen held opposite corners, patrolling inattention. They wandered out into the night, past an orchard overrun with nascent fruits, past a figure in a cloak, sifting and sifting through a heap of sharp implements, searching for someone that wasn't there, circled overhead by two winged creatures. They wandered as the crow flies across the countryside, until they came across a private coach, which they boarded. Thus they travelled in comfort, arms still linked, through the paths of the living and the paths of the dead, and in and out of worlds, and almost over godhood, before returning to Zurke, and the manor house, and Sethra's chamber, and, indeed, in the end, Sethra's bed.
Epilogue. On the Care and Feeding of Vlad Norathar. "Dear Enchantress, I am sure you will agree that it behoves Vlad Norathar's family, all his family, to take an active part in his upbringing. Kira and I therefore extend, in advance,
our sincerest thanks to you for volunteering to mind our son while we are occupied elsewhere. To this end, I enclose some instructions regarding his care and feeding. Feeding. Vlad Norathar needs to eat food and drink water to survive. He is not to eat new fruits. He is not to drink spirits, clava, or coffee. He is too young to cut his own food and is generally indifferent to the use of cutlery. Eastern red pepper makes him sneeze. Apples give him nightmares. He may be given slices of lemon as a special treat. He will pick weeds, but under no circumstances is he permitted to eat what he has picked. He is not permitted hallucinogens. He should be given food and drink meant to dull pain only as previously directed by Kira or myself. Care. Vlad Norathar is not permitted to undertake sorcery, elder sorcery, or unsupervised witchcraft. He is not permitted to undertake any forms of magical interference not yet known to the general populace. Should he undertake unsupervised witchcraft, you may take away his toys for a time, and you may disallow him to accompany you for sport while you teleport. But you must still tell him that you love him. Do not take him off the world. Do not take him to the paths of the dead. Do not take him outside the Empire without express permission. This includes to the East. His favourite toy is a stuffed sword gifted to him by Norathar. He has a small blanket which he takes many places and which he has named Blanky. He needs hugs. He is very fond of drawing. You may wish to supervise him while he is at the library at Zur Mountain. He has been told not to touch your great weapon. He has been told not to bother Tuko, but he may need reminding. He is small and can only climb 3 stairs at a time before getting tired and cranky. He cannot swim. Should he encounter Ibin or Daymar, please supervise his conversations. He has an imaginary friend named Devera, with whom he sometimes speaks. Do not be alarmed by this, as we feel sure Devera is no more than a passing fancy. Please tell him stories about Vlad, but only such stories as paint Vlad in a good light. We will revisit this and other items on the list as Vlad Norathar grows. He is, of course, permitted to visit with his father. On the matter of Corti, Vlad, and Vlad Norathar. Dear Vladimir, yes, I wish for you to attend my wedding to Kira. There, I've said it. If you read no further, you will have at least read the most important part of my letter. If you choose to attend, I hope we will have the opportunity to speak further. Though, as you may not wish to attend, or be able to attend, and as I will be, as I am sure you remember from the occasion of our wedding, quite busy on the day, I will write further words here, in case we should not get a chance to speak soon. Before I continue, please let me give you assurance that Sethra has given me assurance that it is absolutely safe for you to attend the wedding. I won't repeat here what she said, in the event that this letter should fall into the wrong hands. I can only say that she sounded quite certain, and that I, for one, trust her with your life. As an aside, Vladimir, I must say that it is quite disconcerting to see someone as... And here, I find myself at a loss for words to describe one such as Sethra Lavode. There can be, of course, no other. She is legendary, reclusive, and severe. All of which is quite enough without adding that she is undead, and in possession of power that should by rights belong to thousands upon thousands of beings, rather than one. You know, I think that I am rarely intimidated by anyone, and yet I find myself from time to time intimidated by Sethra Lavode.
It is disconcerting, Vladimir, to witness someone who is, as many say, responsible for the safekeeping of not only the Empire, but the world, occupy herself with organizing something as mundane as a wedding. She positively insisted on, for example, penning the invitations herself, using the most exquisite silver ink. I shudder to think from what the ink was made, and didn't quite like to ask, so I complimented her instead on her handsome obsidian inkwell. A gift, she said, from the late Lady Teldra. Well, Vladimir, I have digressed long enough. I ought now to write about our son, Vlad Norothar. He is well, I believe. There are few Eastern children with whom we can compare him, of course, but he eats and drinks in sufficient amounts, and he now sleeps quite reliably through the night. He is not yet speaking in sentences, but he does now have too many words to easily list. I will say that his favourites so far as frequency are cat, snow, and bubbles, and his favourites as far as sheer verve are fish and ridiculous. His favourite people are Kira, Norothar, Noishpar, Alira, and, I dare say, myself. We have all told him stories of you, starting from the time he was not yet born, and hope that he will soon admit you as a favourite. He is becoming, I think, quite fond of Sethra Lavode, who has, from time to time, most kindly agreed to mind him for us. He is also extremely fond of one of our neighbours, an elderly Tekla woman named Sraheen. I mention her only because you may well be unfortunate enough to meet her at our wedding. Please accept my apologies in advance. We felt, after all she's done for us, that we ought to invite her, but I must say we regret it nearly daily. Vlad Norothar is, I think, a happy child. Please do come to our wedding and meet your son properly, Vladimir. On the subject of Kira, I shall say little. As you will know, I dare say, what an exceptional person she is. I will only say that I am glad I found the path into her heart, and she into mine. I love her very much. I love you as well, Vladimir. You know as well as I all of the reasons we can no longer live together. I hope that one day you will resolve your conflict with the Dreg and come back to Adrilanka. Perhaps even to live. So that you can see your son as often as you like, and he can see his father. And Kira and I can make your acquaintance all over again. With love, Corti. The End. Title from Wedding by Alice Oswald. From time to time, our love is like a sail, and when the sail begins to alternate from tack to tack, it's like a swallow tail, and when the swallow flies, it's like a coat, and if the coat is yours, it has a tear, like a wide mouth, and when the mouth begins to draw the wind, it's like a trumpeter, and when the trumpet blows, it blows like millions. And this, my love, when millions come and go, beyond the need of us, is like a trick. And when the trick begins, it's like a toe tiptoeing on a rope, which is like luck. And when the luck begins, it's like a wedding, which is like love, which is like everything.
Sethra Lavode was no stranger to the Shirke.
Fuck it, I did it already. Tell me how to say the word.
Surke.
Surke.
Surke. Surke. Surke.
Surke.
Surke. Surke.
Surke.
Surke. Let's fucking try it. He was acting Count Surke in his... Surke. Fuck. Why won't this stick in my head?
Surke.
Surke. Noishpar. How does Sethra talk?
How do we remember Sethra talking?
Vampire voice. Vampire voice. Too deep. Vampire voice. Very smooth.
But Loyash did not know his line. Clearly, neither Vlad nor Cordy had exposed the dreg to Parfi. One did not operate as one of Adrilanka's most responsible. Why is that the word that comes into my brain?
Simply put, the Genoine are here for the same reason they are always here.
Okay.
I suppose we don't. I suppose... I'll do it in...
I've forgotten how to do Sethra's voice. How have I forgotten how to do Sethra's voice? Fuck.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
So, welcome to this, your creator's free talk.
Yes.
With me, Freckle Bonfig.
And me, Res Estate.
So. we are here to talk about this, our very self-indulgent project.
Extremely self-indulgent.
Extremely self-indulgent.
Extremely.
And also the final part of a trilogy, which we have been making now for 3 years.
We have.
Which...
It's exciting.
Now that I say it, it's kind of a long time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We could always do, like, side projects with it.
Maybe, oh, yeah.
In future years.
Oh, yeah. We could always do, like, you know, the fan work of the fan work thing.
Yeah.
We do, like, spin-offs.
Yes.
You know.
Because it's a great universe.
It is.
Like, canon is great because you can basically do whatever you want in canon, and it makes sense because of the way canon's set up.
As you said earlier today, everything is canon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nothing hurts.
Everything is canon and nothing hurts. Like, you know, Kraygar's adventures. What is Kraygar getting up to during all this time?
His typewriter.
With his typewriter. You know, he could be doing anything he wants that we want.
Exactly. And, yeah.
Exactly. So this is a rich universe that we could spend many, many more years and hours in. And I think that's beautiful.
I like it. I mean, I've had so much fun with, like, all of our collaborations for this.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't believe, like, how glad I am that I asked you to collaborate with me.
Like, a million years ago.
In 2016. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been extremely fun.
And even though our simultaneous read-through of the whole series didn't quite pan out that way, I think I'm still stuck on Dragon.
I'm stuck on Isola because I'd only gotten as far as... I think I'm halfway through Xur. But I think I've been halfway through Xur for like 2 years now. But then I re-listened to Isola, which is actually a really good seg because that's where I got the... Well, I feel like for a lot of these projects, I haven't really written them specifically to be recorded. It's more like, here's a fun thing that we both like that we can do a fic and a podfic for. But this time I was listening to the audiobook for Isola, and Loyosh has an absolutely amazing, horrible Italian accent that needed to actually, now this fic needed to have Loyosh's voice in it. Like, it absolutely needed to have Loyosh's voice in it.
I remember you sending me a DM about this, and we'd already decided on the concept. You know, we'd kind of been talking ideas, and then you sent me this DM and you said, I'm listening to this audiobook and Loyosh has this accent, and I was like, I can do that. I can do a terrible Italian accent.
Yeah.
And
I
did.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. I really hope you enjoyed Freckle Bonfig's Loyosh accent and like all of her accents and all of her everything. So, and that's one of the things that I put so that I wouldn't forget to say is, like, basically I can write pretty much anything that I want because I know that you, like, as a performer, you've got, like, the range to, like, do everything. So, like, the humor, the softness, the Loyosh voice, like, all of your voices, like Cadi and Devera, like, when she's like, yes, Andy.
I'm like,
and Noishpa, so.
I'm like hiding my face in my hands. This is
so. Yeah, I keep forgetting, like, every time I go to do one of these hand gesture things, like, nobody can actually see me right now.
I can see you.
So, yeah.
I can see you.
So, we're like Kraygar. Both of us.
Yes.
We're here.
But nobody can see us.
Exactly. And we can see each other.
doing Loyosha's voice was really fun, but I, of course, was like, oh, I can freestyle this, and then instantly was like, no, I need to research this. Because I did a first try and it came out very Eastern European, and then I was like, wait, I have Italian friends, I have Italian family. How do Italians actually sound? And I could not think. So I started watching videos of actual Italians speaking. I think I watched a clip of Donatella Versace.
Because, as you do.
As you do. She actually has a very distinctive, like...
I love the
phrase is idiolect.
I love the idea of Loyosh being...
sounding like Donatella Versace. Yes. He didn't sound like Donatella Versace.
I mean, the potential.
But if you listen to him talking, he actually starts out sounding very, like, weird mishmash Eastern Central European. Transylvanian, I refer to him as. He just doesn't sound like he's from anywhere. And then he gradually gets more Italian as I get, like, more practice. Because I was like, I'm not going to get caught up on
perfectionist
stuff. Exactly. I just went with it.
And also, just somebody's ear is not that great. It sounded consistent throughout. Neutrophile is like complete mishmash of Eastern traditional and non, like, just random clothing, if it's in really well with that.
Yes. I really like doing Neutrophile as well, because I was like, there are so many characters in this and I didn't want to get stuck on doing distinctive voices for all of them. But for Neutrophile, I really wanted him to sound like, not authoritative, but like...
Chill.
I wanted Neutrophile to sound chill, and I ate him a bunch of vocal fry. That clip where I forgot how to do Sethra was when Sethra and Neutrophile were talking, and I had to do a Neutrophile line, and then I was like, fuck, how do I... Because they have a lot of similar attributes in my head, Sethra and Neutrophile.
Yeah.
They both know themselves very well. They both had a lot of lived experience from their own perspective. Although, compared to each other, they have very different, quantities of lived experience. So I did this Neutrophile line, and then I was like, what does Sethra sound like? I have no idea. And then I had this, like, mini meltdown. I was like, this is the central character. I can't forget what she sounds like. Anyway.
I love the bit where you're, like, vampire voice. Very smooth.
Because I've done a bunch of vampires, right? And they all sound the same, like, functionally. Yeah. Like... technically in the throat they all sound the same, but yeah. I was like trying to remind myself what a vampire sound. Vampire voice.
Yes.
Oh my god, that was those were tough times, because I did that all in one recording session. So it was like a 3-hour recording session, and I was like, I was deep in it, you know. I was like, I can't stop now. Oh my gosh. But Sethra was so fun, because she was like very, like, unemotive to her own perception.
Yeah.
Like, she was like, I'm not experiencing any emotions right now.
Exactly.
And that was really fun.
Why would I be?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
I have nothing to be emotional about, like...
And that was so much fun. That was so much fun to perform.
So, I really had a lot of fun writing her. Just, like, trying to figure out how she would react to, like, different situations.
Especially in contrast to, like, Marolan and Alira.
Yes.
And Devera and all the other characters who were, like, experiencing a lot of emotions and fine with it. Yeah. And then going back to Sethra, who was like, this is what we must do. This is the course of action we must take. It was great. It was so much fun.
Somebody has to corral these people into actually getting some work done. Kind of. I mean... Alira and Merlin would have gotten there in the end.
Maybe. Would have broken a lot more shit, though.
Yeah. There would have been more, like, drama.
And Teldra. Oh. The way you wrote Teldra and Sethra was so, like, it was so painful and so beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. I had so many feelings.
I didn't start out intending to write Teldra Sethra, but then I kind of realized it was heading in the Teldra Sethra direction, and then I remember messaging you and being like, are you okay with this? And we're like, yeah, let's just go for it then.
I'm so glad you did. I'm so glad you did. So, I had so many feelings about it.
So I did as well. But it was fun to this sounds bad, but like to give them like angst that they could just work their way through.
Or not.
Obviously things are going to go south after the end of the fic, but that's the end of the fic. We don't need to worry about that.
No.
So, things will go back to the way they were, and that was working out for everybody.
That beautiful day.
Yeah.
Where they got to, like, work as a team and, like, mutually respect each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I really loved writing them working as a team, and I really loved, like, Sethra acknowledging, like, Tildra's, like, qualities. Like, what she could bring to the situation, basically.
Oh, it was so gorgeous.
So,
can we talk about the Genoine?
Yeah.
And, like, that whole, like, sequence of Marolan's drink and how it tasted like...
Oh, yeah, the gateway to another world.
The gateway to another world. Because that, when I first read that, I was like, my mind was completely blown.
That was me attempting to try and write a plot that made sense. Because obviously, the plot makes no sense. And when I was listening to Asola, I purposely didn't finish listening to Asola until well after I was finished writing, because I knew that I would get to the part at the end with the Genoine and be like, no, now I can't write the Genoine, because the Genoine are terrible and horrible and they should not be treated lightly at all. And also, I didn't want the story to be super dark. And obviously, they were going to win over the Genoine, but... And I've lost my train of thought. But basically, like, trying to get the Genoine onto the scene and, like, moving along from the one scene to the next scene without writing 7,100 words in between. So,
well, it didn't have to be a novel, did it? It didn't have to be a canonical novel.
So,
but also, you managed to do that thing which we both love about that happens in the books, where something from our world occurs in the books, but is described in a way that makes sense for the in-universe.
Yes, and that was... You probably remember this, but that was your idea to have the Yerkwams.
Was it?
It was. It was either your idea or Joe's idea, and I kind of think it was your idea. Because I've never actually had one in my life, so I had to research them, like, from scratch, basically. It's like one of those how-to things. So I read a couple of those, and I was like... And then how would Merlin, like, how would I describe that without actually calling it a Jägerbomb?
I love that it's Merlin's approach to a Jägerbomb as well.
Yeah, so I've been working on this for, like, a while, 200 years. It's a secret. I'm being very dramatic about this because I'm very young for a dragon.
It's the most dramatic Jägerbomb.
Yeah.
It tastes like the gateway to another world. Yes. And then Sethra's alarm bells start going off.
Yeah, and I like how Kadi is, like, very clearly indulging him.
So
because
great.
She is very much older than he is.
Yes! It's so good. That whole sequence is great. And it's also very, like, light. It's very, like, drinking at a wedding. And then, until it very much isn't.
Yeah.
And then it's very, like, oh, you know, mortal peril.
Yeah.
And then, the best, like, not the best part about the fic, but the part that made me, like, that was so delightful to me was when... Like, their way of getting rid of the Genoine was the grow sequence.
Yes.
And that made me so happy.
Yes, that was, like, directly influenced by you introducing me and Joe, I think, to the grow game. So, and we were, like, I was furiously trying to beat, like, Grow Park. The entire time I was also, like, beginning to write the story, and when we were talking about the story, and it just, like, kind of made its way into the story, because... Why come up with some sort of, like, complicated military getting rid of these enemies when you can just use something like Grow Park as a structure and just, if you move things around, you'll get the result you want.
Yeah.
So, exactly.
And that kind of slightly unreal perception of reality where everything shifts and changes.
That's very the series, too.
Yeah, it really works.
So, yeah.
And that, like, amorphous white blob that can change into anything without notice.
Yeah, there was definitely, like, it was not that much of a reach to get from the Genoine to the, whatever those creatures are in Grow Park.
Yeah.
Because
they're
both giant white blobs.
Yeah. Oh. And that one weekend that we all hung out, and I was, like, completely obsessed with the fact that these old Flash games that I was, like, also completely obsessed with when I was 17 still existed, and there was an app of them, and I just... got everybody to download these apps, and then we were all obsessed with them all weekend.
Yeah,
while you were writing.
Yeah,
and then they just got folded into the fic.
Yeah,
and then the way you folded them in was just so amazing.
It was fun. It was so fun to see, like, that's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where, like, when you know you want to do something with Vic, but you don't know if you can actually do it. That was very much like, I want to do this, but can I actually do it, and how will I make it work? Because it would be so cool if I can do it.
It was so excellent.
So, but yeah, I liked it.
And it has that, like, military build-up. Because they're strategizing.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in like a warlike kind of way.
Yeah, I think that's like very, well, Merlin and Alira just being battle hungry anyway. So Sathra, like, with her military background. So
yeah.
So she was intimidating to write from that sense, because I don't know anything about military strategy, and I don't particularly want to know anything about military strategy, but obviously, like, Sathra knows that stuff inside out. So when I'm writing her as a character, I have to try and not ignore that, or try and, like, work it in somehow. So
I mean, it kind of works. Maybe because it's the Genoine and they require unorthodox tactics.
Yes. Yeah, that also really helped, because if it was like an enemy, I guess because they think so differently than the Dragaerans, that you can get away with a lot because you don't have to use things that actually make sense, which as a writer is very convenient. Extremely convenient. Let's have all our enemies be like the Genoine.
Yeah.
Except for not, because they would crush us and that would be horrible.
Yeah, not for that.
So, no.
What was something else in the text that I...
And when, also, because I want to say thank you for beta reading, and that was one of the things that you picked up when you were beta reading, is that I needed to fill more things in that part, because it was sketchy, because basically it was sketchy because I didn't know what I was doing, but it's also helpful, like, it was helpful to me for you to read it and say that it needs more here and here. And,
oh,
like,
yeah, the pacing of the generation.
To shape it, so thank you for that. That was brilliant. Like, that helped me focus and actually do it, and kind of like an outside of pin, because I think the tendency is when you write something to hope it's good enough, and even if you kind of suspect that it might not be. So it's really helpful to get the outside feedback to be like, yes, no, this doesn't work for this reason, or this could be better for this reason, and then to have that to go back and look at it again.
But so thank you. It's fun reading stuff that's not quite finished or that is in progress, because especially because I do a lot of beta reading, it's easy. Well, it's not easy, but it's nice to be able to look at something and kind of figure out where needs more or where needs less in order for the pacing to work. And it was really clear there that you just needed, like, a little bit more in that sequence for it to feel, like, fleshed out.
And that's, like, one thing I find, like, as a beta reader is, like, it's so much easier to see that when it's not, when you don't already know what's going on in your own head.
You can see
the parts that are missing.
Cool. Oh, and the end. Sorry, I'm just like, rolling around in how much I like about this text. The ending of that, of the whole, of like the standard text, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
The ending is so gorgeous when Sethra and Teldra, like, have the little moment together.
I'm glad you like it.
Oh, it's so beautiful because they know that they don't have
a really long,
a very long time together. So they just, the way that that kind of swishes off into like a poetic tone is so lovely and, like, dreamlike.
And the way that you perform it is amazing, because it just sounds so soft and gentle and flowy, and just, and then at the end it's like this really soft sense of finality, but in a hopeful way as well. It was really, really this beautiful to listen to.
I really wanted it to have, like, a fairy tale, like, bedtime story feeling at the end.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely comes across.
It turns into a different kind of story at the end.
Yeah.
And, like, something that is a fairy tale. And so I wanted that to stop being Sethra's perspective.
Yeah.
And to hear that in my voice by the end of it. I'm so glad
it really did. I was like, I mean, obviously I loved listening to the whole thing, but that's one of my very, 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 very favorite parts to listen to. So, yeah. When I was writing that part, like, I kind of realized, well, first of all, that's the part where I stuck Craigar in, because I got to the end of the vic and I realized I hadn't put Craigar in and I meant to put Craigar in. I was like, this is perfect though, because I wanted them to, like, be moving through the same universe as the characters who are in the story, but also I didn't mention any of them by name because I wanted it to feel, like, kind of separate from what was actually, like, it was very much like Sethra and Teldra centric at that point. So, yeah.
I love the picture you paint of, like, Vlad going through all his weapons with his familiars overhead, and
Yeah.
And Craigar being there but not there, and it's so lovely.
It was so much fun to write. And then I got, because basically, like, this the fic is, like, extremely, extremely, extremely self-indulgent. And I've always loved that part in Where the Wild Things Are, where Max is, like, going actually to the Wild Thing Kingdom and just the language in the story at that point. So I, like, lifted that rhythm to borrow from that part because I figure it's fic. It's not, like, we're doing this for ourselves. Nobody's going
to
care.
We're here to amuse ourselves.
Exactly, exactly. So
it's like the byline.
Yeah.
The secondary byline.
Yeah, after
everything is canon and nothing hurts.
Yeah. But it was like, yeah, really, it was just such a neat story to write. Like, I just really enjoyed it. I liked writing everything about it. It wasn't one of those stories that was hard to write, if that makes sense. Like, it was a bit hard to get started and to make it all fit together and flow, but, like, generally it was, like, pretty easy. And it was really easy to start it when you and Joe were there, because I could, like, write stuff and then bounce stuff off of you guys. So the part where I'm here for a good time, not a long time joke. Like, I literally remember thinking about that and, like, telling you guys, being like, so, like, just that kind of instantaneous feedback, like, as a writer is, like, fantastic, because then it's like, I'll just go and write some more because, like, obviously this doesn't suck.
That was so funny.
So
you were literally sat there and you're like, how do I say I'm here for a good time, not a long time? And we were like, oh my gosh. Put in Dragaren.
Yes, put in Dragaren.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, you hear it in the outtakes, but when... Because I think I read it, but the joke didn't land the first time I read it. And then when I went to record it, I was like, oh my god, that's so funny. The pinky in the brain joke like, it absolutely killed me.
I'm glad, because, like, it amused me, so I had to put it in there. So I'm glad it amused you as well, so...
We're here to amuse ourselves.
Exactly.
But I think when you go into a fic and you're just like, I only want to do things that I enjoy.
It's so fun.
Like,
it just makes it such a joy to write. As a writer, I find it's just, yeah. It's like, why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I just make it fun?
Yeah.
So.
And I was making the podfic of it for you.
And I was writing it
for myself.
Yeah, and writing it, like, for you and for myself. Because, like, who's going to get all of the references and the jokes? Like nobody.
Nobody.
So, although I did include for Joe, because Joe was there with us, William Nylander.
With the hair?
Yeah. So, yeah, I was like, because at first I was going to have Teldra dance with the necromancer, and then I was like, I don't really want it to dance with the necromancer, because that's like, that kind of brings the tone to, like, a darker place than it needs to be.
And I liked the joke about...
Who else can she dance
about
with?
Her commenting on how he had hair covering the whole side of his face. Because, like, Dragaren's don't have the facial hair.
They really don't.
And then the hair on his head failed to cover the rest of his face. And I was like... That's so funny.
So...
That was pretty great.
Yeah, so I stuck that in there for Joe. And then I sent her, like... I think I sent her, like, just that little bit so she could read it and say, does this actually sound like William? This is, like, if I describe this.
That's so lovely.
And she's like, it could, but it could also be, like, one of another number of hockey players. So, and she said she liked how it was ambiguous. So I was like, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, ambiguity is good.
That's really nice.
So thorough intent is that it's William Nylander, but does it have to be? No, it could be the hockey player of your choice.
And in fact, any number.
Exactly.
Any number of them.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah. And I put some skating jokes in as well, because I had to.
Nice.
So
I liked the, Sethra didn't know what a Grand Prix was, but she thought it might be soothing to find out. That was great. That was so great.
I think when you're Sethra Laveau, like, everything that's not the fate of the world is probably like, that sounds restful. That sounds really restful.
Tell me about your low-stakes hobbies.
Yes.
Is anybody going to die if it doesn't work? Oh, lovely. Please carry on.
Yeah. It was fun. I don't know if I have.
Do you have any other notes?
I think we covered everything. I was going to say it was really fun to write the letters. It was really fun to listen to the letters. Because your Kati voice and your Kati performance, like, I just love how you gave her, like, her own. She definitely sounds like her own kind of, like, distinct personality, who's also kind of, like, loves everybody but is also kind of over everybody at the same time.
But, like, that's
Kati.
That's her, right?
Yeah. I loved listening to, like, the letter so much.
And when we were first talking about this, the very first time we collaborated for the very first somewhat of this trilogy, I gave you a word limit of like 4,000 words, or maybe 5,000.
Possibly, yeah.
And then I think we maybe pushed it because I was working on three other collaborations because I was like, Pod Together's amazing. It's amazing. I want to do Pod Together forever. And so I think we kind of carried that through to this one, or maybe without really discussing it explicitly. But this year, this is the only Pod Together collaboration I'm doing. But I'm also modding a bunch of stuff, so, you know, my time is not infinite. And I remember you saying, I've kind of written 6,000 words or 7,000 words-ish.
Yeah.
But I've also written these letters, so, you know, they can be like a bonus if you have the time to record them.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I read them, I was like, there is no way I'm not recording these. That's so wonderful. These are incredible. I'm taking this. Yeah. And I still don't think I know how long it is. Because I read it from the AO3 draft, and there's no word count on the AO3 draft.
It's a ridiculous amount of words, and that's actually scary to me as a writer, because it's 9,000 and something words. And
well, because I recorded...
When I first started...
I recorded... It's an hour and 12 minutes long, the thing I sent to you.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to be close to 10,000.
Yeah, it was 9,000 something. But I just kind of... wrote that without really thinking about it, whereas when I first started writing, that would have been like a massive deal. But I'm worried that like the words that I'm comfortable writing is growing higher, which is obviously going to take up a lot more of my time, and it's like not so good when I have to like actually keep myself to a definite word limit. So I guess
the length of words that I can record has grown a lot recently as well, because I used to struggle to record more than 5,000 in one, like,
yeah, I would, I struggle, like, anything I can record for, like, maybe in half an hour, 45 minutes, and then...
You gotta take a break.
I need to take, like... Yeah. That's good, though. I mean...
I think just with changing how I do things has been really cool for that. I'm actually recording an 18K fic for Podfic Big Bang.
Nice.
Yeah.
You could take this opportunity to promote your new project.
It's quite niche. It's like
This isn't.
It's an industrial Solbond hockey AU.
Nice.
Which you don't need to know anything about canon.
Nice.
To listen to.
Nice.
And I'm doing some fun things with sound effects.
Cool.
Possibly physical sound effects, I think.
I'm nodding.
Because there's some telepathy involved. And I might just do some physical sound effects for the telepathic communication, like talking into a metal bowl.
Oh, okay.
Or something like that, because I'm all about the physical sound effects.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the letters. And when I saw that the letters were both written by Korthy, and the small amount of Korthy that I had the chance to perform in the first...
Two.
Just in the dialogue that she had, I had so much fun. Because, like you said, she's kind of done.
Yeah.
She has been an infamous assassin.
Yes.
And she's done with that. Yeah. She's a revolutionary.
She's basically Tessa Virtue, but it's like an assassin.
Yes.
So.
Assassin Tessa Virtue.
Yeah.
She's like raising her kid.
Just put with Sreen.
She has to put it with Sreen.
Who is a lot, but I love her.
I love Sreen.
I love Sreen
so
too.
Much. We only ever hear about her, but like the things we hear, the basket of life, Norska. She's like dealing with Kira. She dealt with Vlad for all that time. She's like, she's very over it.
Yeah.
And then I got to do this whole like epilogue as Korthy, but like, talking to Sethra, and then talking to Vlad, and like, I'm clutching my heart with my hands right now.
I've got like the biggest smile on my face.
Korthy's letter to Vlad like really moved me a lot, and I think I had a little cry during and after reading that letter, because it's so vulnerable and it's so like, matter of fact.
I'm so glad that came across.
Oh, it's so
I don't even know if I could say that that's what I was aiming for, but when you say it like that, it's like, yes, that's what I wanted, because it's like, like, she's got a reason for writing this letter, and it said she wants Vlad to know he could definitely come to this wedding.
Yeah.
But then it's like telling him like all sorts of other important things that he needs to know as well, and that she wants him to know.
Oh, it's so much, because they have so much history, and so much of it is so painful, and there's so much that they can't reconcile.
Yeah.
And she's saying, like, we can't reconcile this stuff, and I want to know you, and I want your son to know you.
Yeah.
And it's, like, all of this complicated, like, good, crunchy family stuff that doesn't go away.
No. No.
And she's like, it's not going to go away.
Yeah.
You can't just make it go away by not coming to see us.
Yeah.
She's like stepping up and being like, well, I have to be the bigger person here because you're not. She's doing the heavy lifting then.
Yeah, she does a lot of heavy lifting.
She does. Daddy. Oh.
Yeah.
And I remember you talking before about how Cordy's hard to write.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have an awful lot of characterization in the books.
No.
But the characterization that you can take from what we know about her is that she is this practical person.
She gets things done.
She's the revolutionary who's out there teaching people how to read.
Yeah.
Because the people need to know how to read if they're going to read the leaflets about where to meet to have the revolution. She's
extremely practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just, getting to read her, getting to perform her doing that, like, reading those letters was such a treat. I really,
That makes me so happy.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. And just that little bit at the very end of that letter where she was telling Vlad that she didn't need to say anything about how wonderful Kira was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it just got me right in the heart. Oh,
I feel like, Kari, I feel like she's a very private person, and also she knows that Vlad knows Kadi.
Exactly.
They have got, like, it's that history again. They've just got so much shared history.
Yeah, it's very much that. They've so much shared past, but also, like, they don't have to, like, not have a shared future.
It was just I can't remember if I said this part already, and if I did, then just edit it out, but when I got the idea to write the letters, I usually write in order, but I literally stopped everything and just wrote the letters because I just wanted to write them so badly. And I think when we first started the series, I was very nervous about writing Kadi because I didn't feel like I could capture her voice very well. So I think, like, over the past couple of years, as I've been doing more writing, has gained more confidence in myself as a writer, which made me more able to tackle Kadi, and also, like, from doing the previous podfics or projects with Kadi in them, and also I think, like, from me performing Kadi and, like, giving her, like, that characterization that she does have in the novels is, like, you're bringing her to life to make it more possible to write her, if that makes sense.
That's really wonderful to hear. Thank you.
So,
well, it's been a really, like, the collaborations that we've been doing have had, like, a really transformative impact then. Yeah. Because, you know, we have built a, like, an additional
universe.
Like, fanon universe then. We've built our own Korthy and our own Kira, and, like, added that to canon, and, like,
It is canon.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It just is.
You know,
canon is whatever we want it to be.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Should we talk about the cover art?
Oh my gosh, let's.
Yeah, let's talk about the cover art.
Before we do that, because I feel like this will be shorter, let's talk about the music.
Yes.
Because I think I pitched you the music possibly before we started talking about the fic in any real depth.
Yeah.
Because there's this one song called When You Give Your Heart by Laura Veers. And I think...
It's a beautiful song.
It's so nice. There's an acoustic version of it that I've listened to more times than I've listened to the studio version, even though I have the album that the studio version is on. And it's just her and a guitar. I think she's demoing a specific guitar for a guitar shop. And that's why she's playing it. And she's got this lovely, like, really gorgeous voice that feels like it shows emotion really, like, really clearly.
Yeah.
And it's this song about it has a lot of nature imagery in that a lot of her songs do. It's either nature or the sea with her. And it's a song about being in love, but also about the way that love is giving and the way that love is accepting. And there's a line in it about laying your burdens down.
Which is beautiful.
Which is so lovely. And the way that love is a revelation and about seeing the world anew around you, but not in a vague way, in a very specific way, about seeing the pollinators buzzing around you.
Yeah.
And it's really lovely, and it's very summertime focused, but there's that very, I mean, you described it nicely. It doesn't necessarily speak to romantic love. It could also speak to friendship.
Yeah.
And like
the whole laying down the burdens thing, like Teldra helping Sethra defeat the Genoine and Sethra trying to make Morallan feel better by indulging him with his ridiculous concoction and all of that. Like everybody helping each other out, like Marie France and Patrice taking care of all these children that they don't even know just because they're there. And that's just the kind of thing that they do, so.
Yeah. And the fic has a lot of feeling of community in it.
Yeah, that's one reason, because I did feel a little bit badly, because originally, like, the first two parts of the trilogy are very much Kati and Kira focused, and then this one is definitely not as Kati and Kira focused. But I also did feel like it was a chance that wasn't really on purpose, but then I couldn't fit everything in, and I just wanted everyone from the canon basically to be there, like all the characters that we both love who have maybe like not been in the previous books or have had like two sentences in the previous books. And obviously like a wedding is bringing people together, like it's that community that they want around them at this time, so so it just kind of happened.
But it's like, so it kind of works nicely because a wedding is about standing up in front of your community and you know, declaring your commitment, and that imagery of giving your heart to another person matches really nicely with that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a brilliant choice, so. And I'm glad we decided to still go for it, too, so.
Yeah. Well, it's something that I pitched to you at the beginning because we thought that it was going to be a fic about the two brides at the wedding.
Yeah, and it just...
And it obviously went somewhere else. You know, we're okay with that.
Yeah.
And then...
This has just happened. I don't know how they happened. Like, I don't know how we got from that to what I actually wrote. I just... And it's...
You know...
Like,
It's just
happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we...
You know who I blame? It's Sethra Lavode, because obviously, like, when she gets involved, it's just, like, whatever she wants. Just, that's what happens.
It really is.
So...
Yeah. But I'm glad when we reassessed the music, we kind of... I listened to it, and I thought about the lyrics, and I was like, actually, this is still really appropriate. Yeah,
definitely.
Really appropriate. And it's such a beautiful song.
And I can't wait to hear, because I've only heard the version with the words. I haven't heard the version with the music yet, so I'm really, really excited to listen to that.
I haven't added it yet, so I haven't heard it either. Okay. So I'm excited. But I know that the song will work well.
Yeah.
Like, as podfic music, because when I picked it out, I was like, oh yeah, this has a good instrumental intro and everything like that.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the cover now?
Yes, let's talk about the cover.
Okay.
I'm glad we talked about the music, though.
Yeah, well, so, I didn't want it to come after the cover, because we were so excited about the cover today.
Yeah. Well, because we had, like, a breakthrough about the cover. Or you had a breakthrough about the cover, which we should probably talk about, because it's amazing.
We haven't talked about New Fruits yet, so this is what we didn't talk about New Fruits either. Somehow. But this works really well, because... Yeah. The second fig in the trilogy.
Yes.
We talk about old fruits.
Yes.
So the pomological
Twitter account. Which is amazing.
Which we're both very fond of.
Yes.
And attached to.
Yes.
Featured on the cover of the last one.
Yes.
It did. It was a little...
Yeah, all of the apples and the nightmare apples. That's why I gave Plaid North our apples, gave him nightmares, but it's because of the nightmare apples.
Oh my gosh.
It's super self-indulgent. Like, literally everything in there is, like, self-indulgent.
The nightmare apples. I think that's only a phrase that I use, like, that's on, like, my locked Twitter. That's incredible.
Yeah, but I must have seen it.
We ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Okay, so.
We need to put that in the summary for this fic, or somewhere in the notes.
Oh my god. Okay. This is so many levels of self-reference, Steve. So the cover image of the podfic for the second podfic in this series, which is called
something. Don't ask me what it's called.
I can't remember which line it is. Oh no, we didn't.
The Wind Is Passing By, maybe?
I didn't turn off the mobile data on this.
I feel like it's The Wind Is Passing By.
The Wind Is Passing By. The cover was lots of different watercolour paintings from the Pomological Archive, and was featured in that fic.
Yeah.
Craigar was...
A fruit artist.
Was a fruit artist.
Yeah. He took it very seriously. Very much enjoyed his work.
Commissioned by the Empress.
Very important work. Yeah, he wasn't quite there with actually drawing the fruit, but...
And between writing that fic and writing this fic, we discovered there was another Twitter account called New Fruits.
This was such a momentous day, because I remember you sending me the link and being like, have you seen this? And it was New Fruits. And then also when we discovered the new facts...
The new fruits have facts!
Yes, and you told me about the new facts too, and I was like, what? That
so somebody has made a bot which procedurally generates new fruits...
Yeah, completely made up fruits with made up names.
I imagine they've taken inspiration from the old fruits account, which are paintings of peaches and plums and
mostly apples, and strawberries,
and they are generating new fruits, which are all kinds of colours, and each new fruit has a fact, which just blows my mind. We will obviously link to this account.
Yes, because you need to see it in your eyes.
It's so good. And so we decided that somebody has to...
Yeah, we had to have new fruits in this one because...
Somebody has to be into the new fruits.
Yeah.
And obviously this was Alira.
Yeah.
Because who else?
Yes.
Who else would be experimenting with new fruits?
Exactly. In her, genetics laboratory.
And you picked the best named new fruit, I think. Yeah. I don't think I've seen one with a better name.
I had a look at the fruits that are around at the time that I was writing that part that were showing up on the Twitter account, and I picked the one that I liked the best.
The Ascension Potolai?
Yes, which are very good in pies, because I think that was the fact as well. I think I used the fact.
Very good, because
anything that I can not write myself to make it easier, I'm going to do that.
It's also so good to say. The Ascension Potolai.
It is a good name.
It's a good name to say.
It's a good name.
Yeah. Anyway, so we decided that we would take a bunch of the different references that we've included in this fic. So the Grow game, the Ismay's Grow games, have this structure, this frame structure with the various elements that you can add to the game, kind of in a grid along the bottom. And we thought, we're going to take that grid and use that structure, that frame, for the cover. But instead of the various elements like water,
genuine,
person, genuine, fire, sticks, whatever the elements would be for that game, we would put new fruits along the bottom.
Yes. And that was, when you had that idea, it was absolute genius, because of course it needs to be new fruits.
Of course it needs to be
new
fruits.
What else could possibly be? Yeah.
Yeah. So then we've immediately got the two nichest references.
Yeah, right there in the cover.
Right there in the cover.
Where they belong, front and centre.
Where nobody else will understand what they are, because I think we are the two most...
New fruit people.
Most new fruit people. I don't know anybody else
I feel like there's a couple of people who are at the fringes of old fruit.
New fruits is so much further.
Yeah.
So much further.
Yeah. I don't think anybody else likes new fruits.
No. We're the only ones.
So, this podfic actually has all of my fandoms of two. So it obviously has the Dragaera fandom of two.
Which is us.
The new fruits fandom of two. Also us.
Which is us.
And then Marie France Dubray and Patrice Lazon, which is me and my friend Nat. So that's all of my friends. That's
amazing.
All of my fandoms of two, amazing. All on this one project, which is brilliant. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was our cover art breakthrough.
It's going to be fabulous.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited with this.
Yeah.
This tiny niche podfic.
Yeah. It's been so much fun. Considering we're basically the audience for this podfic, that is fine, because I don't know about you, but I've had massive amounts of fun and feedback and just
But it's perfect for us.
Yeah. So, and if anybody else gets any joy out of it, then that is like a bonus.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, some of our friends have listened to the other podfic in this series.
Yeah.
They have massively enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I kind of feel like I was thinking about this when I was on the train, and you can almost listen to this one without having listened to the other two.
Yeah.
Because, like, it, you basically know that Cottie and Kira are together, and that's really all you need to know from the other,
yeah.
the other ones. So.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's actually, you need to know less of our canon. Which is just wrong, because it's, like, basically just fanon. But you need to learn less going into it.
I have warned people who have listened to our podfic that if they then go on to read the series...
It's not quite...
It's not
the same.
It's quite the same.
But it should be the same.
It should be the same.
It should be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. But hopefully more people do read. It's just so much fun, because you can do anything with it, and the characters are so... They're so... fun to play with.
Oh,
it's just been great fun. I don't want to stop doing these projects just because we've come to the end of the trilogy, so maybe we could, like,
there is no reason
do, like,
to
spin-offs, like,
yeah.
you were saying, like, surely we can find something that interests us about this. Well, we already both like the canon, so it's like just
we can go anywhere we want.
Exactly. Merlin has those windows.
So next year, who knows where we might go.
I like the idea of having, like, an ongoing thing. Series. But yeah, it's been... Yeah, when you said in 2016, which I can't believe, it was, like, 2016.
And it was, like, January 2016
yeah.
as well, because I was like,
yeah.
I want to get in early.
We planned ahead.
We did.
We planned ahead.
We did. We had
and
the
I
idea
like,
all set up.
We did really well with planning ahead for this one, too.
Oh.
Like, compare as the first two, the first one and this one, I think we planned the best, because these are the ones we've actually been able to do the free talk for.
Yeah.
Like
so the second one, no
year.
Music, no free talk.
Yeah. But we got it done. So,
we did.
So
we
go
did.
Us.
We did. Yeah.
So, but yeah, last year's actually kind of a blur in general, so.
Because, hang on. Let's record an outro.
Yes, we should record
okay.
an outro. Okay. Like, something like, thank you for, no, because thank you for listening.
You have to be like.
But more enthusiastic than that, because, like, if anybody actually does listen to this, I'd be extremely grateful.
No, we have
to.
I
would give them my life.
We have to do the thing where we're like, okay, should we finish?
Should we finish?
So that we have something to edit.
So we have some. No, yeah, I'm not with you.
Well,
I actually genuinely don't know what's going on right now. Why don't you do the outro, and I'll just sit here and nod.
Okay, I'll do the outro.
No, I seriously don't know what you're on about.
No, I mean, like, we have to segue into the finishing thing, because we've just talked for ages.
We have to say what?
We have to segue into the finishing
bit. Yeah, but I don't understand. Yeah, I know we do. I know we have to do something.
So we have to be like, oh, so do you think we should wrap up now?
Oh, okay, oh. Oh! Del, do you think we should wrap up now?
Oh, how natural!
Yeah, no, the road to naturalness is gone.
Okay.
But do you think we should wrap up now?
Yeah, I think we're probably
okay.
done.
I think we're done as well. I think we were done about maybe half an hour ago.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's so good to talk about podfic.
Oh, it's so good,
it's so good
to
talk about like podfic, that like collaborations that we've done together.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
And the many future potential collaborations.
It's like new fruit, but like new pod together podfic.
That is exactly what it's like, except not bot generated.
Not bot generated. Can you imagine if there was like a bot that would just like spit out ideas for like stories in this universe?
If I knew how to make bots, then I would be making that this afternoon.
That sounds
like today.
Yeah. But I'm sure together we can come up with like something better than what a bot would come up with.
Agreed. Vehemently agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That probably didn't sound enough like I agreed with that, but I definitely also vehemently agree.
Okay.
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 So we're well on our way to doing an outro.
We
I think.
Are. This is definitely fully in the middle of an outro. We're bad at this.
I'm bad at this. You had this, and then I derailed us by not knowing what was going on.
That's fine. We're making this
yeah.
together. This is a
yeah.
collaboration.
Yeah.
Collaborative effort.
Yeah. I was going to say I'm bringing us both down, but I think that's not true, so let's not... I'm not going to say that. Okay. Yeah.
That was us...
Yes.
...talking about what the podfic...
Yes.
...that you listened to.
Yes.
You hypothetical listener.
We might just be talking to ourselves.
I think we are.
That's fine. That's fine.
Because this and maybe, is, like, I'm Lillian, half of the potential audience for this.
Yeah, I'm definitely half the potential audience for this.
So, thank you for listening to the podfic and all of this free talk.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we do.
If you listen to this, basically, thank you. You are a superstar.
You are a superstar.
And you should make yourself known as the superstar that you are. If you so feel inclined.
And if you have not read the Dragaara series or any part of it, then we would highly recommend that you do so, because it is a great time.
It is extremely fun. There are so many books, so many fun things that happen, and it's just a series that you can kind of sink your teeth into and roll around in, and just, it's great. The characters are great.
Sarcastic assassins.
Yeah.
Witchcraft and sorcery.
Castles.
All good things.
In the air.
Yeah.
Literal castles in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why that's the only good thing I can think of. There's so many good things.
Coffee.
Yes. The food is amazing.
Yes.
The food is amazing.
Yeah.
The friendships are amazing. And just the character growth is amazing. And just how different all of the books are is also amazing.
Oh, the writerly devices.
Yes.
Are such a fanfic.
Yes.
Thing.
Yes. It's a very fic-friendly series. I feel like if you love fic, you will love this series, or there's a better chance that you'll love this series. And I don't understand why you'd be listening to this if you weren't a fic reader. So you, basically, you, listener, are the perfect audience for this series of books. The Dragaara books by Stephen Bruce.
Yes, that series. We are talking about the Dragaara series by Stephen Bruce.
I thought I should mention that.
I mean, it's on the AO3 post, but yeah, we have not yet mentioned it in this free talk.
That's true. So,
okay, so with that, we will say goodbye.
Goodbye.
I have been Freckle Bonfic.
And I have been Rez Estate.
And we hope you have a great day.
We hope you have a fantastic day.
Bye.
Goodbye. Yay. Go us.